And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure...
Direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
The Fred and Jeff Show.
And good morning, everybody. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating all the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
Except...
Oh, yeah, we had a little issue Friday night.
Someone got paid on Friday, Fred. Somebody got paid. I love the people at St. Luke's Home. Yeah, they're wonderful folks. So
Noche Caliente.
Right, was Friday night.
Salsa. And by the way, thank you all the people who sent in recipes for the salsa. It was not your fault. Somebody... was paid.
Someone got paid. That's all we're going to say.
That's all we're
going to
say.
That's all we're
going to
say.
But we love St. Luke's Home. Support them with your
time, your donations.
Yeah, the tax, what are those things called? The tax deals?
Well, this, I think theirs is the tax credit for the working poor.
Tax credit for working poor, yeah. So help them out. They're a great organization.
Yep.
We're not too happy with the judgment.
The outcome, because someone got paid.
But we would like you to invite you to fredandjeff.com.
Right.
Where you can listen to past shows, mm-hmm. Check out some pictures of our guests. And
you know, wait a minute. I'm still stinging a bit from this. I would just like to offer anyone else out there that's having a salsa competition to invite Fred and I into it, because we should win.
We should.
And if we don't, someone got paid.
That's right. That's exactly correct.
So check us out on Facebook. Like us on Facebook.
And follow us on Twitter.
That's right. Follow us on Twitter and check out friendjeff.com. And remember, you can download us on iTunes and take us wherever you go.
That's right. And that's we used to back up and running. And
yes, it is.
It's very sparkly.
And it's running quickly.
It is very quick.
Maybe not as quickly as Mr. Bolt, but it's running quickly.
It is running quickly.
Yeah. Hey, did you enjoy the Olympics, Fred?
You know, I really did. I didn't get to see a lot of things. And I was really disappointed, actually, and I think a lot of people were disappointed in the coverage of, by our TV affiliate, mm-hmm. or, you know, the NBC.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I wish that they paid a lot more attention to was the decathlon. Because I remember when we were growing up and Bruce Jenner won the decathlon, mm-hmm. and that's truly the Olympic event. I mean, it's 10 different events, and I'm not going to name them because I don't know them all.
Right.
But, you know, that's really the test of a solid all-around athlete is the decathlon. And, you know, the beach volleyball, the soccer, the basketball.
Swimming, gymnastics. The gymnastics was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was all great stuff, but the Olympic event, I think, is the decathlon, and it really got short-sheeted, I think. That's my personal opinion, but the, you know, opening ceremony is gorgeous, closing ceremony is spectacular. Eric Idle singing, always look on the bright side of life.
Right,
it's really, really fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm glad they went off so well, and I'm glad, you know, we had some Tucsonans that won a medal or two there as well.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah. Now we got a bunch of stuff coming up this week and coming down weeks after tomorrow.
Mañana,
August 20th, is Tucson's birthday.
Wow.
Now, listen very carefully to this one, because it will be hopefully the basis of our trivia question later on when we give out a dozen roses from Mayfield or a gift card to 1702.
$25 gift card to 1702 pizza and craft beer.
Yeah, so there is going to be a flag-raising ceremony, and typically it was always held in the morning. This year they're doing it in the early evening from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. I believe the actual flag-raising is going to be at 7 or 7:30 with cannon fire going off.
Sweet.
But there are seven flags, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, seven flags that have flown over our city. So if somebody can come up with what those seven flags are.
All seven. You want all seven.
Well, we're giving people fair warning.
Okay, very good.
And send that to us at fred@friendjeff.com.
Should we take the low-hanging fruit out?
What's low-hanging fruit?
Arizona.
Okay. And United States.
And United States.
That's the low-hanging fruit.
No, there's more low-hanging fruit.
No, there's not. No. Okay, over the course of this show, you will be able to give out the answer, Jeff. Let's not just, you know.
But I want to give out the answer.
I know
answer.
You want to give the answer out. That's your best radio skill is giving away answers. That is what you excel at.
I'm good at that.
So there are seven flags that flew over our great city. And
Mexico.
Our city is not Mexico.
No, but didn't the Mexican flag fly over our city at one point?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, you thought I was going to say France, but I didn't say France.
No, you said France a couple days ago at lunch.
I did say France.
And that is a wrong answer.
That is right. But I didn't say Tone Odom.
Hey. We want to remind people, dog days of summer are still going on at the Tucson Botanical Gardens.
Yes.
So every Tuesday through August, so through this month, you can bring your dogs on leash, bring a pooper scooper too, you know, a little baggie or something, and hang out at Tucson Botanical Gardens with your puppy. The Padres, this is their last homestand this week. The 22nd through the 26th.
Kids are back in school. This is it. You know, it's always, to me, it always rings in the end of summer, that last minor league baseball homestand. You know, whether it was the Toros or the Sidewinders, now the Padres.
Yeah, get your last Padre dog in and, you know.
Yeah, see the Kino Bambino for the last time this season.
Right.
Yeah, so, and then we're into football.
Go U of A!
Yeah! Rich Rodriguez!
And the last thing that we have going, and this actually is in September, September 28th, but I know, Jeff, you're so excited about this that we're announcing it over a month in advance.
Uh-oh.
Tucson Roller Derby's first bout.
Oh my gosh. I am so excited, Fred.
September 28th, it's the Vice Squad versus the Furious Truck Stop Waitresses. For more information, TucsonRollerDerby.com.
Do you get to be like a celebrity manager or something for one of these roller derby games?
No, I talked to him about that.
I think you need to. Yeah,
but you know what? This is why
I would love to see some of these girls come whipping around the corner and just take you out.
Actually, it almost happened one time. I was sitting on the edge of the track.
Yeah.
And somebody crashed into somebody else, and I was like inches away from being murdered. Or severely injured.
Severely handicapped?
Yeah. Well, I'm already severely handicapped. Severely injured. Even more handicapped.
I would pay good money for that.
Well.
The money that was paid the other night. That's what they should have used that money for.
To take me out?
No, for you to be the manager of the Furious Truck Stop Waitresses.
No, I just like, you know, these girls are great. Not only is it a fun time, it's a fun family activity, but they, every single bout, every single time they play, a portion of the money they raise goes to a Tucson nonprofit.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So I don't know.
No, you can't say anything bad about the Tucson Roller Derby.
No,
so those guys are awesome.
I don't know who they're going to be supporting in September, but we'll announce that down the line.
Perfect.
So that's all I got.
All right. Well, folks, we are going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to introduce you to a gentleman who knows a lot about Tucson's birthday, so stick around.
When you're alone and life's making you lonely, you can always go downtown. You've got worries and all the noise and the hurry seem to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose?
Why are we proud to live in Tucson?
Because our four-star spas, guest ranches, and resorts attract admiring visitors from around the world.
And our original restaurants draw rave reviews across the country.
Because the Science and Technology Park is creating a cutting-edge biotech corridor.
And the University of Arizona leads the nation in optics and astronomy.
And because the nation's best gem and mineral showcase brings us thousands of visitors every year.
This is My Tucson, and together we thrive.
At Barker Morrissey Contracting, our goal is to develop lasting relationships with each one of our clients. We measure our success on achieving that in the end. We offer the best possible combination of experience, integrity, and commitment available in Arizona. The foundation of our organization is a commitment to meet our clients' needs from pre-construction services through project build and move-in. We have experienced, cohesive project managers who thoroughly analyze each project prior to construction. We do this to provide value engineering at the front end of the project while reducing time-consuming change orders during construction. We are confident that our collaboration with you will result in a successful project that will exceed your expectations. Barker Morrissey Contracting. Straightforward, honest, and reliable. Call us at 323-3831 to set up an appointment. That's 323-3831.
Hi, this is Jeff Ronstadt from Ronstadt Insurance and the Fred and Jeff Show. Healthcare reform is a reality, and it's very, very confusing. So give myself and my staff a call at Ronstadt Insurance at 520-721-4848, and we'll help you figure out what healthcare reform means to you, your employees, and your family. Ronstadt Insurance, we are pioneers in good service. Give us a call at 520-721-4848.
Casa de la Luz is Spanish for House of Light. That's what one needs when facing a terminal illness. A House of Light to provide comfort, support, and experienced hospice care during the end-of-life journey. The mission of Casa de la Luz is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Founded in 1998 by Lynette Jaramillo and Agnes Poor, Casa de la Luz Hospice has become a leading provider of superior hospice care throughout southern Arizona. Whether it is in the hospital, at home, an assisted center, or a nursing home, the caring staff at Casa de la Luz will reach far beyond the usual and customary hospice service. Every service provided is a reflection of our commitment to our community. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And we're back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson. You know, one of the things we don't do enough, Fred, is we don't ask our listeners to support our sponsors. These folks make the Fred and Jeff Show, they make it so that Fred and I can come here and talk to you folks for an hour and share all the great things that are happening in our community. So when you hear their ad, please support them so they can continue to support us and putting out the good word for, why Tucson's a great place to
live. Not only that, but we support all these. I mean, we've used all these guys.
Yeah, I didn't want to belabor the point, Fred, but I'm just saying. Let's get back to that trivia question. The seven flags that have been flown over the city of Tucson.
Right. That is a trivia question for later.
Okay, and I'm just saying, I gave you, what, four?
Three, I think.
Three?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Arizona, United States, Tohono O'odham. Are those the three that I gave you, right?
No.
Oh, Pasquayaki? Okay, there's four. All right, we'll keep going. So we got a great guest today, folks. Fabulous guest today.
Yes, we do. Jim Turner, who is a local historian. Actually, Jim, and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, give us a little bit of history. You're a friend of the show. You've been on a few times.
Sure.
We love talking to you. Given this year is the centennial of the state, we've been talking a lot of Arizona history.
Right.
But let us hear about your history.
Well, we moved to Arizona in 1951. Because the whole family.
Wow, the whole Turner clan.
We were eight generations in the same house outside of New Haven, Connecticut. I came down with asthma. The doctor said, you got to move them to Denver or Tucson. My dad never wanted to shovel snow again in his life. And so here we are in Tucson. It was 2 years before he got rid of his snow boots. He just didn't realize that he wasn't going to need them ever again in his life. But so I went to local schools, Peter Howell and Alice Vail and Rincon. And then my dad used to take us all over the state visiting, historic sites. And I just got hooked on it and took my first class. And actually, it was Tucson history in 1974. And then I taught Arizona history for my student teaching at Canyon Del Oro High School in 76. So I've been doing this history thing for about 40 years. Always getting paid for it, but always studying it.
Well, do you remember who your Tucson history class professor was?
John Dreyfus.
John Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Any relation to the Dreyfuses of old Tucson?
Yes. His aunt was Madeline Dreyfus, the one that started the, help me out here,
I am not a historian.
Temple of Music and Art.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he told us that he had, violinists and, you know, because this was the Saturday Morning Club. These were the women that brought in famous opera singers and violinists before we had the Temple of Music and Art. And they gave these performances to raise money to build the Temple of Music and Art. So he got, they would stay there at his house, his aunt's house, and he got private performances.
That's very cool.
His father-in-law was Bob Leatherwood, who was the mayor of Tucson when the railroad came to town. So this guy had some roots.
That's great.
That was like 1882, right?
1880. Yep.
That's very cool. Very cool. So that's what got you hooked on the history of Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think it was living here for one thing. I mean, when I was a kid, I'm 63, so every other TV show was a Western. And then Dad took us all over the state. And so I dedicated my book to my dad because without all of that, you know, I probably wouldn't have gotten hooked on it.
Well, you brought it up. Let's talk about that book real quick. Arizona.
Arizona, A Celebration of the Grand Canyon State. And when I was working at the Arizona Historical Society, we were approached by Gibbs Smith Publishers to do a fourth grade textbook. And I was co-author of that textbook. It's called The Arizona Story. But then they wanted to do a centennial book, and I retired in time to write this book. So it came out last October, and it has more than 520 images, and these are from museums all over the state. And so I always like to say it has more text than a picture, more text than a picture book, and more pictures than a textbook.
And you took a lot of those pictures.
I took more than 200 of the pictures. Yeah,
and just. We've read it, and you provide us with copies of this book, and it's just gorgeous. And the history, it's stuff that you learn growing up here.
Yeah,
but it's always good to get to have it refreshed in your memory. Just some wonderful stories about the state.
Well, and it's all in one place too. Yeah. Somebody asked me yesterday. She found out I was a historian. I was over at Starbucks, and she found out I was a historian. She said, "Was there a German POW camp where they found a map and escaped?" And I said, "Yeah, it's in my book. These are German POWs. They snuck into a truck that was unattended, and they found a map, and they found this blue line, the Salt River. So they built these kayaks. I kid you not. I couldn't make it up. They built these kayaks. They had other prisoners have a party on Christmas Eve. And so to cause a destruction, they had dug a tunnel 143 feet. And it got them out to a major canal. They get out to the canal, and there's no water in it. And then they trudge all the way down to the Salt River because they've got the map. So they follow the canal to the Salt River. There's no water in the Salt River. And one of the quotes from one of the POWs, because they have reunions and everything, and the quote in my book is, "Those stupid Americans, they put a blue line on the map where there's no water."
Yeah, but who won the war?
Yep, there we go.
Oh, my gosh. That's a great story.
It is.
Rivers
and
in the desert.
They're all in one place. I mean, these stories are all over the place. Then she asked me about the Battle of the Bulls, during the Mormon Battalion when they marched across Arizona. They frightened a lot of bulls down by Charleston near Tombstone, Arizona, on the San Pedro. And these things stampeded. And I think it was like three men. One of them got trampled, one of them got gored, and another one, his pistol went off and shot him in the hand. But that is the only battle of the Mexican-American War fought in Arizona. It's called the Battle of the Bulls.
Well, wait a minute. There was a battle he fought here for the Civil War,
that's right? That's right, at Picacho Peak.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the furthest west?
It is the farthest west. There is one other skirmish out at Fort Stanwix, which is almost to Yuma. It's out by Gila Bend, basically. It's halfway to Yuma. And the Union soldiers were at a stage station, and the Confederate soldiers snuck up on them and shot one of the Union soldiers, and shot him in the butt. He was a German immigrant, and we don't know if he fired back, so that can't count as a battle because it was just shots were fired, though.
Yeah. Or at least one.
Yeah, at least
that
one shot
like a
was fired.
Police incident.
Yeah, exactly.
No rubber bullets.
But the Battle of Picacho, April 15th, 1862, that lasted, several hours, an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Well, who was stationed here?
Confederates were here.
Ah.
Yeah, from February 28th 1862 until May, they raised the Confederate flag.
Oh, did they now?
It flew over Tucson.
Well, what do you know? Interesting information.
One of the many flags that have flown over Tucson.
I think there were seven, right?
Yeah, it seems familiar.
Gosh,
yeah.
I don't know why Fred's decided to give the trivia question at the beginning of the show, because then I get the whole show to give him the answer.
All right, well, Jim, during the break, you were talking about your belief that there ought to have been
another flag.
That eight flags ought to be recognized.
Yeah, I go to the flag ceremony almost every year, and I'm so glad it's going to be at night this time, because August 20th is not a fun time to be outdoors
in
the middle
warm.
Of the day or
right.
in the morning. But I guess several years ago, I'm watching the flag ceremony, and it occurred to me that we had a group of Manzo Apaches, or also called Apaches de Paz, peaceful Apaches. In about 1797, the Viceroy Galvez developed this peace plan, and the idea was, step number one, just drive the Apaches until they're ready to surrender. Just go, 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 always out in the field. And when they are ready, tell them that if they come live by the presidios, the forts, and there were 22 from here to the Gulf of Mexico, they would be given free beef, free blankets, and free guns. And so we had about 1,000 Apaches that were living right where Dunbar School is now, from roughly 1797 till in the 1870s. They were still there. There were some still there, and they probably had married into the Mexican families, you know, in the barrios on the other side, Manzo and that sort of neighborhood. So they're probably still there. If we did DNA, we'd probably find them. They also married into the Indians at Santa Vera. And so I think there should be an Apache flag.
Because wow.
They didn't actually fly a flag, but the flags represent people that were here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were definitely here, and they rode alongside the Spaniards.
So.
And helped, you know, they were auxiliary, soldiers for the Spaniards.
So the Viceroy was from Spain?
Yes.
Interesting.
Now, were these the same Apaches that also helped, the United States cavalry?
Oh, the Apache Scouts?
Right.
No, those were mostly White Mountain Apaches. Later on, they were Chiricahua Apaches. But that the Manzo Apaches, when Spain left, the Mexican government came in.
Oh, they did.
In 1821, they won their independence. And so when Mexico took over, they could no longer afford the beef, blankets, and guns, because they didn't have the royal treasury. And so the Apaches, the Manzo Apaches, just sort of drifted back to their homelands and started raiding again, a lot of them.
So how many different tribes of Apaches are there?
Well, they're bands. They're
okay,
not
bands.
Really. And they can be, basically there's five major ones, and I can't really think of all of them. Chihene, Bedoncoje, Choconan. Geronimo was Choconan, but he rode with the Chiricahua. So those are the basics. But there's some in Mescalero in New Mexico. And so, but they didn't have a tribe as we know it. And that was one of the problems, was that the military officers that came in thought, well, if we make a treaty with the chief of the whole tribe, but there wasn't really. They were family or regional bands of anywhere from a couple of hundred to, yeah, usually not more than a couple of hundred per band.
Okay, well, that was a quick half hour, and we've got to take a break at the bottom here for the news. So, folks, come back for the second half of the show. We've got Jim Turner, our friend, the historian here, and we're going to talk more Arizona history. So we'll see you in a minute.
It's never been easier to enjoy downtown, even during construction.
Downtown.
And with more than 15,000 parking spaces, it's a breeze to find a spot.
Downtown.
While you're downtown, you can enjoy everything from world-class cuisine to great casual dining. Have a night out on the town with the best nightlife around.
Shop at amazing stores with unique fashionable goods that you won't find anywhere else in town. Take in a show downtown.
Explore dozens of galleries.
Downtown.
And museums support your local
downtown.
Businesses see more at downtowntucson.org.
That's a better ad. People will love that. People will go, did you hear that dumb ad for downtown? See if you can do something like that.
Are you planning a special event or celebration? Call Arizona Party Rental, the number one party rental company in southern Arizona.
Dave Fitzsimmons, cartoonist here. I figured since you can buy politicians so easily these days, why not rent an entire party? So I contacted Arizona Party Rental, and they said, that's not what we do. Well, guess what I found out? I found out they rent everything you need to throw a party. You know, I'm the kind of guy who likes getting married so often, it's good to know. Planning a party or a special event? Check him out at ArizonaPartyRental.net. Now, every time I get married, I call on Arizona Party Rental. If you're like me and you say I do more often than Larry King, call on Arizona Party Rental. And unlike Uncle Sam, they understand what a tight budget means.
Thanks a lot, David. Hi, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. Do what Fitzsimmons does. Draw your own conclusions. Visit Arizona Party Rental today on Speedway and check us out on Facebook.
Do you suffer from irrigation leaks, a broken sprinkler, leaky valves, or you just can't find the problem? At H&S Garden, we provide high-quality, reliable service at reasonable prices. Our repair technician has over 25 years of experience. And if you hate pulling weeds, raking mesquite beans, or trimming those thorny bushes, just leave the dirty work to us. We're licensed contractors with 30 years of experience in landscape management. Our crews are professional and take pride in their work. We'll meet you on site to establish a program that works for you. Call today at 293-6488 or visit us at hsgarden.com. H&S Garden, a family-owned and operated Tucson small business.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back, Tucson. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so wonderful. And Jeffrey.
Yes, Frederick.
We invite people to visit us at fredandjeff.com.
Absolutely, we do.
Follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook.
That's right. Download us on iTunes, because you can get our shows on iTunes and carry them around with you.
And the fun thing is our webmaster, George Jensen at georgejensen.com, has put all the icons, the social media icons, on our website. So if you go to fredandjeff.com, there's a little icon. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Facebook. You can go to Twitter. And
you can sign up for our newsletter.
And you can sign up for the newsletter.
Very cool.
So we're here in studio with Jim Turner, local historian, friend of the show. And we've been talking
Arizona Historical Society.
Right.
What was your title over there?
Professor?
Historian.
The in-house historian, the chief historian?
Well, human resources for the state of Arizona had me listed as historian. That was
very cool.
That was it. Yeah.
Very cool. Who is anyone taking your position over there?
Nope. Budget situations.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to have you on here today, because fortunately, we don't have budget issues here at the Fred and Jeff Show.
No, we have wonderful sponsors.
That's right. That's right.
Now, tomorrow is Tucson's birthday, August 20th, 1776.
Yes, tomorrow.
It was the anniversary date. So there's always a lot of stuff made, a lot of big things about Hugo O'Connor.
Yes.
Actually, Hugo O'Connor, who was an Irishman who joined the Spanish army.
He was a wild geese.
Yes, one of the wild geese.
Mm-hmm. But before we get into that story...
Too late.
Well, that's not, take a step back.
Okay. Yes. Because, take a deep breath.
Because you are a historian.
Yes.
We've had Big Jim Griffith on,
right.
Historian. He's a folklorist.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people, I guess over time, it turns these urban legends sort of become history, and there's sort of a blurred line.
Right.
And so since... I thought we'd spend just a few minutes talking about the difference between folklore, history, legend, all that kind of stuff, because you're a very precise person when you talk to us about these things.
Right. Well, and Big Jim, we have a little lunch club that meets every Wednesday, and sometimes he's there, sometimes I'm there. But when I first started going to that club and he got to know who I was and what I did, he said, "Jim, you have it tougher than I do, because you have to print the truth, and all I have to do is tell people what the stories are."
Oh,
what,
he came on the show once and told a story about the Santa Cruz River trout.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic story.
Tell that story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
It is. It's a wonderful story, but it's incredibly hard. The more you study history and the more into detail you get, the more slippery the facts. I once did a paper on a fellow who was an editor in San Francisco in 1851, and he was shot in a duel. And so I'm reading every newspaper I can because I want to know, you know, he was hit. He was wounded. Well, where was he hit? You know, if you're going to write a paragraph about this guy getting shot, somebody's going to say, did he get shot in the arm and the leg? I must have gone to 11 different sources. Some of them said arm, some of them said leg. I never could decide what the truth was because it's way back when, and whoever's writing it has their own bias. If you've got a memoir where it was written 40 or 50 years later, then their memories are sketchy. So it's really almost impossible to get the facts, but you can get some general things that sort of get skewed. And so historians try to use the rules of evidence. You know, you want three unbiased witnesses, just like you'd have in a courtroom, in order to substantiate. And then, like an anthropologist, you might talk about their bias. You know, this guy says this, but his brother-in-law was involved with it. So you've got to take that into account. And sometimes it's not the majority of accounts because people tend to remember as a group, or as the years go by, stories always been told this one particular way. So even though they were there, they start telling the story that isn't true.
So how do you discern between the truth and the bias?
You just, as I said, you have to use judgment and those tools, and then you sometimes have to say, we'll never know whether the guy was shot in the leg, but you include that.
You give all the caveats.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is how the Hugo O'Connor story has kind of gotten...
Well, there is a little cultural bias with Hugh O'Connor, and for those who don't know the story, he was a captain, well, eventually a colonel in the Spanish Army, and...
Well, take it a step before that. Uh-huh. He was in the military in Ireland.
Yes. Well, he was the son of a chieftain, I believe, and that was not a good thing to be in Ireland in the 1750s because the British were oppressing them. So many of them fled and joined the Portuguese army and the Spanish army. They became mercenaries, and they were called the Wild Geese, as you said, because they had flown from Ireland to join these armies. And there was a whole regiment of Spaniards, of Irishmen in the Spanish army, and they were called the Hibernian Regiment because the Romans called Ireland was Hibernia. And so they had the regimental flag, which did not fly over Tucson. The Hibernian Regiment was not here, but Don Hugo O'Connor, or Hugh O'Connor, as he would have been known in Ireland, fought in Cuba and also in Texas. I think he fought against Comanches in Texas. But by this time, he was a captain. He was given the job to realign the presidios. There was a line of Spanish forts from the Gulf of Mexico almost to the Gulf of California in Altar over there. And so they wanted to put the frontier farther north and line these forts up so they could support each other. And he got to Tubac, and the commandant there, he says, we need to move this up to Tucson. And there was a priest there who was from Santa Vera Mission, and that was Francisco Garces.
This is after Padre Kino?
Yeah, much later.
Okay.
This, we're talking 1775.
Okay, got it.
And Francisco Garces, I'm pretty sure it's Francisco. He's got a lot of different names in there, and I forget which one goes first. But Father Garces brought him up to Tucson.
And O'Connor had some criteria for relocating the forts. They wanted a place that had water, a water supply. They wanted a lot of wood for fires. And, you know, so it had to be a wooded area, or had to be wood near there. They wanted crops, fodder, for the horses, etc. And, they were looking for allies as well, Indian allies against the Apaches. And also they wanted kind of a place that had a pretty good high elevation so they could see the Apaches coming. And Father Garces said to O'Connor, "Have I got a place for you? There's a natural spring. And there are mesquite forests, and it's on a little bit higher plane, and there's 900 Pima Indians living at the base of A Mountain." So Garces took O'Connor to the spot, and that's where he said, "Okay, this is it. This is where we're going to put the Presidio, right here." And then he left. He was there for one afternoon. And O'Connor then went on to, I think it was east to Terranate, and moved the Presidio that was in Mexico, in Santa Cruz, Mexico, moved it up to, just east of Tombstone, or west of Tombstone. And so we know by the next afternoon or the next day, he was out of Tucson. He was only in Tucson for maybe one day, maybe 2 days.
So this is like saying that Neil Armstrong discovered the moon.
Or founded the moon.
He founded the moon.
Yes.
I mean, now Fred and I have Irish descendants.
Okay.
We also have Irish friends.
Yeah.
Who probably aren't going to talk to us anymore after this show. But yeah, that's kind of akin to that.
You mean Irish ancestors?
Irish ancestors. Yes, we do. And run the gamut here, Fred, of not being invited to Bob Dobbs anymore, any of those nice places.
Nice places?
Well, nice to meet. So, wow. So that's the whole history. Now, how did it go from he's the guy that the priest brought up and said, this looks like a good place, and takes off?
Yeah, the way the story runs, it makes it sound like he was here for years and had an office here. And,
had kids.
And there's
and
also
family.
A statue. There's a statue down in Paseo Redondo.
Oh, yeah, but the Hibernians put that one up.
Yeah, I know.
Ah, there's the answer.
Yes.
The Hibernians.
Actually,
it's all in the PR.
Yeah, now I feel like a sucker because I put $1,000 into that and I got a little maquette.
Good for you.
And that could be a trivia question.
Yeah, how much did I get bilked by the Hibernians?
No, the Hibernians do good work here in Tucson.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They're good guys. They're good guys. But, yeah, maybe you're right. The good PR department.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people think the Ronstadt's founded Tucson, and we just let them go with that.
Sure, why not?
No, it's not true. So, all right, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Jim Turner with some more fascinating Tucson facts. So, folks, stick around.
The Fred and Jeff Show online at fredandjeff.com.
Shelby, how does Five Star give back to its customers?
Existing monthly pest control customers who refer a friend to us receive a discount on their next service.
How about your current termite treatment customers?
When a customer's home is treated for termites, they refer a friend who has their home treated, they will receive an additional year of service on their termite contract.
Wow, that could add up to over $1,000 in savings.
Yes, it can. Log on to our website for details on our customer rewards program.
Five Star, the natural choice. 886-0045, fivestartermite.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Ronstadt from Ronstadt Insurance and the Fred and Jeff Show. Healthcare reform is a reality, and it's very, very confusing. So give myself and my staff a call at Ronstadt Insurance at 520-721-4848, and we'll help you figure out what healthcare reform means to you, your employees, and your family. Ronstadt Insurance, we are pioneers in good service. Give us a call at 520 721-4848.
When Jeff and I are looking for a good cigar, we head over to Anthony's Cigar Emporium.
That's right, Fred. They have a great selection, knowledgeable staff, a comfortable environment. It's the perfect place to buy a cigar for any time.
Three convenient locations, one at Oracle and McGee, one at Crossroads Festival at Swan and Grant, and their new location at Williams Center at Craycroft and Broadway.
Come on over to Anthony's Cigar Emporium, get your cigar, and you might even run into Fred and I, and you can tell us why you love Tucson.
What's a monkey burger?
A simple, well-made burger, cooked to your choice.
Why monkey burger?
We called it that because come see our art on the walls. It tells a story. Monkey burger, where it's impossible to be a food snob, even if they do serve wine, beer, as well as Tucson's best burger. 514-9797.
Just drive right past Olive Garden on Broadway and Craycroft and park in front of Monkey Burger.
Women Investing, an award-winning comprehensive financial services firm, offers customized programs designed to help grow and conserve your wealth. We encourage you to explore our website at powerwomeninvesting.com and learn more about the services we provide. If you would like to make an appointment, call us at 571-9053. That's 571-9053.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson's News Talk FM.
And welcome back. This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeff.
Hola, Tucson.
And we invite you to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, and like us on Facebook. And speaking of websites, we would like you to visit our friend, Jim Turner, our guest today at jimturnerhistorian.org.
Right.
So, Jim, we were talking Tucson history. Tomorrow is Tucson's birthday.
Right.
We want to hear just a really cool Tucson story.
Well, and I've got one for you. On Sunday morning, May 1st, 1782, approximately anywhere from 300 to 600 Apaches attacked the Presidio all at once. And there were only about 30, maybe 40 Spanish soldiers in the Presidio at the time. And so they almost drove the Europeans out of Tucson.
Now, Hugo O'Connor was here in 1776, right?
75.
1775.
Yeah.
So how close to finish were they with the Presidio?
Well, they didn't move in. That's another thing. Tucson's birthday is the date that Hugo O'Connor wrote a letter that said we should move the Presidio from Tubac to Tucson, but it didn't actually move until the fall of 1776. So it's an unbirthday. It's not really Tucson's birthday, but the commandant who moved the soldiers from Tubac to Tucson was illiterate, as far as we know. We don't have any records, written records, of what day he actually moved the troops, but we do know Juan Bautista de Anza was going through the area on his way to found San Francisco. He went from Tubac to San Francisco. And on his way out there to do it, there was nothing here. On his way back, one of the priests that was with him wrote in his records that the soldiers were in Tucson. And that letter was written in the fall of 1776. So we know the soldiers moved sometime in the fall of 76.
Okay.
And it would make a lot nicer birthday because it would be cool. It would be like, oh, let's make it November and we can be cool with it.
So why did the Apaches attack the Presidio at this point?
Horses.
Horses?
All the time. Yeah. The horses and guns were an attractive nuisance. The Apaches raided the Pima Indians and the Tohono O'odham on a regular basis from the as soon as they started to come into this area, probably the late 1600s. But when the Spaniards came in, they brought horses and guns and metal knives, which, you know, it's a lot easier to use a knife than a sharpened rock. And so, but mostly they would raid the Presidio. And they would just kind of, the horse herd, the corral was outside of the wall fort. So they would just swoop in, grab the horses and run and hope that, you know, they're not going to get killed or anything. But they did get killed. The Spaniards chased after them. And then it became a cycle of vengeance where eventually they started attacking the fort. But in this particular time, they had to get a lot of these bands of Apaches together in order to get that number. The priest said it was about 300. The soldiers said it was about 600.
Wow.
We have about 5 eyewitnesses reports to this, you know, when you ask about how do you get the facts. We have about 5 different versions of the of this big attack that happened. But there it was their intent to wipe out the whole European situation.
So 300 against 30?
Yeah.
And they didn't, yeah. They weren't successful?
Well, here's what happened. they attacked, but there was a guardhouse, and the front gate was right about where the art museum is now, right on Main Street.
Okay.
That used to be the Camino Real, the Royal Road, and the main gate of the fort was right there where the art gallery is. And, but right outside there was a guardhouse, and I think there was an ensign or a lieutenant out there, and he climbed up on the roof with his assistant and started shooting from behind and shooting at the Indians who were flowing through the gate. But they split the number of Indians, Apaches, and some of them went over to the little, what they called the Pueblito, which was the Pima Indian village at the base of A Mountain. So they had split their force, and the Pima Indians defeated them on that side of the Santa Cruz River and then followed them. And so as these Spaniards are trying to defend themselves and the Spanish flag,
yes.
Behind them from A Mountain come the Pima Indians to the rescue. So you know those stories where the cavalry always comes to the rescue against the Apaches?
Sure.
This time the Indians came to the rescue against
the Apaches. That's amazing.
And they managed to get the cannon turned around, and because it was facing in towards the fort. I don't know why, but they got it up on, there was kind of a mound, and they got it up on a mound and faced it towards the front gates. And they hadn't even completed that wall yet, or the gates, so it was just an opening. But they fired the cannon, and I think, you know, they usually filled it with grape shot or shrapnel or something, and that was a bit much. You know, the Apaches were beginning to see, they were used to a hit-and-run raid. They were not a stand and fight barrel to barrel or bayonet to bayonet. Their method was more of a raiding, hit-and-run, and reduce the losses. So when they saw that they were under heavy fire from behind and the cannon, then that was it. That's all they wrote.
Wow. So how many of the 30 were left?
I think there was, I don't remember really. I know that the commandant wound up with several gashes in his leg, and he had to throw his arm over one of the other soldiers so he could continue fighting because he couldn't stand up anymore.
So these Apaches didn't have guns?
No. No. I don't remember whether any of them had guns, but most of these wounds were lances or spears and arrows.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So do you remember, because I don't, and I know I read about it a while ago, when was the last Apache raid in Tucson?
Well, I don't know that one.
I thought there's a book somewhere. And,
really?
And it talks about that there might have been an Apache raid in the 30s or 40s or something like that.
Oh, I don't think so.
No, but it wasn't what you'd think about what you're talking about.
Yep.
It was someone getting upset because they weren't getting what they were supposed to get.
Oh, okay.
So they decided, you know what, that's it. We're going to start.
Let's start another one.
Start a problem.
Yeah, I'd never heard that one.
Yeah, I remember my grandpa Ed saying that, you know,
okay,
that
well,
we were
stop
like
right there.
Two
yeah,
generations
yeah.
away from.
Yeah, stop right there. Folklore.
Yeah, folklore. Here we go. We're back to that. We're
yeah.
back
isn't
to
that cool? Folklore.
Yeah.
I remember when Fred was attacked by Apaches.
Yeah, when a lot of stuff, Grandpa told great stories. But they were stories.
And
Our Grandpa Ed Ronstadt.
Right.
He
right.
and Big Jim Griffiths were probably cut out of the same cloth, you
that's
know?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, that's
well,
funny.
Well,
that's
a great... Isn't he the one that wrote Border Man?
Right.
Well,
Border Man is...
He didn't write it. He edited our great-grandfather or his father's diary.
Memoirs,
okay.
right.
Yeah.
It's a great book, too.
It's a wonderful book.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. So that's a great story, and we got like 3 minutes left, and I don't know what else can we fill with 3 minutes of cool Tucson stuff.
I wanted to go back to, you know, you said that this was an attempt by the Apache to wipe the Europeans out.
Yeah.
Out of the, was, so did all the bands get together for this, or was it?
Evidently. They're not quite sure because nobody did an after game analysis.
Right.
But it probably would have had to be, and actually, one of the witnesses said that they saw a Pima Indian there. In that group. So evidently, there were some Pimas that didn't, at least one Pima, that didn't like the Europeans either. But I think it was a general, probably Pinal and Aravaipa, you know, different bands that sort of got the word out because they had to coordinate it. They had to say, we're all going to do it the same day.
Wow. I can't get my kids to do the same thing.
Well, they never did it again. You know, that was the last time that happened, that kind of number.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have some goodies to give away. A dozen roses from our friends at Mayfield Florist and a gift certificate to 1702 for the first person who sends me an email at fred@fredandjeff.com and tells me the... How many flags, Jeff?
Seven.
The seven flags. Should we add the eighth?
The Apache flag?
Yes. So if you can send me an email with the eight flags that represent the people who have been in this area.
But not the Hibernian flag.
But not the Hibernians. Yeah, there could be nine flags, but no.
No, not the Hibernians. Send me an email at fredandfriendjeff.com. We'll get you set up with some roses and some tasty pizza and craft beer.
That's right. And Jim, thanks a bunch for coming
on. Thank you. I always enjoy it.
Your book is available on Amazon?
Yes, it is.
Okay, tell the folks the name of your book again.
Arizona, A Celebration of the Grand Canyon State.
It is a fabulous, it's a coffee table book. It is just fabulous, folks.
Do you have any engagements coming up people can see you?
Nope, can't think of any right now.
we'll get some for you.
Yeah. So yeah, I do give talks. So if you got a group that wants to have me come out and give a talk, a reunion or a conference or a convention.
The Hibernians might be looking you up.
There we go.
All right, so folks, Jim, thanks for being the guy that you are, the keeper of the history of our community.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it. And folks, get out and meet your neighbor. You know, that's how you make Tucson a great place to live, is get out and be friendly with somebody. And thanks for tuning in to the Fred and Jeff Show, because we really like talking about this stuff. And there's a lot of good things going on in our community.
Absolutely.
So stick around for old Dave Sitton and his cancer fighters.
Cavalcade of Sittonisms.
Yeah, and you'll have a good time. So stick around, listen to Dave. And folks, we will talk to you next week here on the Fred and Jeff Show. Have a great week.